Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schankleberg and Kirk Gray. You're on the line, aren't you?
Yeah, Fred, I'm back with you.
All right. Well, you know, in the last couple of episodes, we've talked about your early life failures. We talked about standards a little bit. But are there any standards for early life failure?
No, I don't know of any standards for early life failure. Give me an example, Fred.
Well,
what could we have as a standard for early life failure?
Burn-in. There's standards that talk about doing burn-in.
Okay.
And incoming inspection. I suspect those are trying to weed out things that would lead to early life failures.
Right.
I know internally companies will do out of box experience. You know, they'll do product testing after it's been boxed up and they'll see how many are dead on arrival or fail quickly. We'll do ongoing reliability testing, looking for, say, stressing at nominally conditions or some level of stress to try to replicate the first few weeks of use.
But sure. Or being really efficient and using HAS, which is another ongoing reliability test.
Right. And those go towards helping us identify and minimize not just early life failures, any failure that occurs. But
right.
Let's go back to standards. So environmental standards, like the MIL standard 810.
Right.
Does it survive in the environment type of standards are nominally, will my design work on the seacoast in a salt fog exposure environment
right.
outdoors?
Would you call these validation or verification?
Well, those are two different ones. I don't remember which is which, but isn't one that it meets the specifications that we set out for the design and the other one's the customer confirms that it works for them.
Yeah.
So, but if we say, like we talked about in the last episode, the temperature specifications, and let's say 0 to 35 C.
Right.
One way to evaluate a product is to run it at 0 degrees C. And sometimes we put a little margin on that, and the better people in our community will test it in low temperatures until you get a failure.
Right.
Right.
A limit.
We'll find a limit and see how much margin we got there. But 810 says test at 0 degrees, you know, for so many hours, dwell, soak, whatever, operate, cycle, and see what it does. And there's power supplies and LCD screens and other things behave differently at lower temperatures. The inrush current's different. The batteries respond differently. All kinds of things happen. But there's no magic to 0 degrees.
No.
So my opinion, and it's probably a strong opinion, anybody that knows me knows that I have plenty of those.
I know somebody else that does too.
Yeah.
Myself.
Yeah.
Okay.
But let's say it's MIL standard 810 or it's an internal set of environmental specs saying it should survive 10 drops in random orientation from certain height, or it's a toy standard that says it shouldn't have any, after dropping, it shouldn't have any sharp edges, kind of a safety thing. Or
Small pieces drop off that could be swallowed by a child.
There's also environmental ones of what kind of surfaces are it's going to get dropped on, concrete or carpeting or hardwood floor, or all different responses. But there's standards out there for voltages, currents from the grid supplied power. There's standards out there for EMI and EMC type exposure, electromagnetic interference exposure. There's standards out there for color fastness and UV resistance type things. There's are any of them useful? Have you ever used a standard and found it to be useful?
No, I haven't been oriented to that. Okay. That's not the way I look at the use of standards. I think standards are incredibly important. For instance, I'm a senior member of the IEEE, and they have set many standards, many of which we know, like the IEEE 802.11, which is the Wi-Fi standard. This allows for all devices that are using this communication to have the same interface. And that's where I feel, you know, standards really have an important role in the whole world of engineering, is so that different manufacturers can interface with different devices, different networks, components have a right, you know, standard, like the USB plug, even though they've made a bazillion, seems like, versions of the USB, there's still, you know, four or five that if you have the micro or the mini or whatever, it fits into every device's micro mini. Those are very critical to.
Well, there's the standard. I've used the standard for wiring my own plugs, you know, home in network. I pulled the cable and I looked up the standard that the orange cable wire goes in this position and the orange and white one goes here. And
right.
If I didn't follow that standard, that circuit wouldn't work.
Right. It's all critical to safety and reliability.
Right.
So
all right. So go back
very important
standards. We'll go back to environmental standards, though.
When we go to environmental standards, we're looking at end use conditions, or what the worst case scenario, I think, for somebody set a worst case scenario. Maybe. Obviously, I can't, you know, that doesn't follow with the cell phone specs of 0 to 35.
Because, well, that's not necessarily, I mean, and some of that's from Telcordia or MilSpecs.
Okay,
and,
but it's a standard.
But, and
it
somebody probably,
standard.
Yeah, but you've been involved with standards. And so a group of folks sit around in a room and they go, well, what's the low temperature spec we should use? And they might look at data. They might not. They might say zero seems to be a good number. We test to it all the time.
Right.
And I remember one group I was working with a IPC standard for circuit manufacturing and quality. They says, well, we have too much yield loss doing it that way, so we won't agree to that. You have to set the standard over here where it's suitable for our process.
So and that we can get product through.
So we can pass the spec.
Yeah.
And there's some of that and
okay.
so on,
yeah.
But it was what I've run into with the weather-related specifications, essentially, is they're a starting point. These are the types that I go to 810 to get ideas of stresses to apply to a product that might be relevant. But the actual limits, I have no idea if those are worst case or not for my customers.
Right. And in many products, we know that the worst case, that the stresses, it may accidentally be exposed to, there's going to be some percentage of the population that is going to be exposed to conditions that are not reasonable, exceed the strength of the materials inherent, you know, not no question about it. Like I say, a laptop dropping out of a window, two stories hitting the concrete, there's nobody in the world that would, I think, expect that to survive.
My daughter, I think, yeah, she would disagree. As many phones and laptops she's gone through.
Exactly.
And she's a big believer in duct tape and shipping tape to hold things back together and keep them working.
And you can get it to work. I have a laptop, a Dell laptop that was dropped, and it actually has physical damage to the outside of the case. But it still works fine, and I'm probably exceeded the point of which it was spec'd at. But again, it's the judgment of the consumer, really, to say, well, that's a fragile device. The manufacturer should have made it stronger, versus the use of orienting, or the fact that, yes, I caused that. I exceeded any reasonable stress for this product to survive. So from that standpoint, that's a very broad judgment, but it also usually comes from the consumer market. And again, nobody would accept a cell phone that really did have a problem at below 0 C or above 35 C in operating. And this, you know, again, for me, it brings about not using those standards. You brought up some good ways or good uses for some of the standards in existence, looking for some of the stress that you could add to a product and maybe combinations of stress, like temperature and humidity. But from there, I take it to saying what, you know, again, looking from the inside out, what is the strength of standard materials and assemblies? What are they capable of? And that's sorts kind of a design benchmark that isn't anything to do with a standard. It does with what is the current level of technology and what it's capable of.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I guess that's the whole orientation of, I guess, a change in perspective and frame of reference that I started with, starting with Greg Hobbs, that I never, you know, followed the path of traditional reliability engineering as far as starting with the modeling and predictions approach. I started from an orientation of test it to what its strength is capable of, and from there make a judgment of whether that's reasonable or that can be improved with simple changes. And if it can, let's do it, because we really don't know the most cases, especially the consumer products, we don't know the worst case or the distribution of the product. And if you pointed out in past podcasts here that the many times the company that designed it didn't know it was going to be used that way or it was going to be treated that way, bouncing down the stairs. I think you talked about some wheels. So you discover these things later, but if you just build it to, you know, what you're capable of building it to without too much expense, obviously you make, in all of engineering, we make trade-offs. We don't want to over-design it. We don't want to put it too expensive. You know, as you said, you can make it so it could take a direct lightning hit, but nobody would buy it. And that event is fairly rare. Whereas a phone being dropped in a toilet, I think, you know, making it waterproof,
too often. Yeah,
it's a little too often. And I think that some manufacturers of cell phones, I've seen it, where they're fairly highly water resistant and can be immersed, which is, you know, one of the phones I had made it conditional on covering the USB interface port with a little plug cover.
Well, it's coming though. We're seeing, you know, more of I've seen more literature in marketing about flexible glass, flexible screens that are much more resistant to drop. I remember with working with a product team one time and the product manager or the product, the product manager, the guy who was running the program, he said, "All right, our first task is to find the big rocks. Let's find the showstoppers. Let's find the things that we have to fix before we ship. And then as time permits, we'll get down to the gravel." And he was using the analogy of lowering the water in a river.
Right.
And so it guided the way we did a lot of our environmental testing. So we had 30 different stresses we wanted to apply. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have a whole lot of samples to work with. So we did a very rough, crude evaluation, but very quickly found that, you know, five of these things, stresses, just caused the product to implode, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And those had to be fixed. And it was a value of just a broad sweep of all these different stresses.
Mm-hmm.
And then once those were fixed, then we couldn't find issues with just two samples and a quick test. So we got more careful about it. We got more selective and we used risk assessment and so on and narrowed it down. And we were looking for the smaller problems and then smaller and smaller problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was an interesting analogy, but if you went straight to standard 810, it says, you know, thou shalt test at this condition for this amount of time and this condition for this amount of time. And here's how many samples you run, blah, blah, blah. You pass. And like you, I found that that's not terribly useful.
No, because the standards are very slow to change, Fred. We know that. It takes a lot to change a standard many times. I mean, it takes a good deal of effort, especially across an industry. Mm-hmm. So, and you just brought up a very good point from like a glass screen that cell phones are using now, and they've increased that. I know that what iPhone started with Gorilla Glass, which was a special glass made by Corning, and the technology and materials technology doesn't stay the same. It continues to improve, where we might get flexible LCD screens, in fact, roll-up flexible, and that's going to add a new level, a higher level of expectation, I think, as we incorporate these into new products, that no longer, you know, would we expect the screen to shatter when we dropped at a certain height. You know, something else, the case is going to be bent or something like that. And we're going to, as technology improves and gets denser, I mean, you look at the phones, they're really a brick. They've got very little airspace in them.
Yeah.
They're almost solid, you know, big solid state, like a big ASIC, you know. There's yeah. just,
it's going to be, eventually it's going to have to use, you know, micro 3D printing to print these things.
Exactly.
There's going to be no air left in them.
Yeah. And there's no way to repair them. I mean, it's like repairing an integrated circuit or something. So, but that's an advantage. They're getting, because of the compactness, they're getting very robust. So that level of expectation from the consumer has been increasing. Now the standards, boy, to change those, it takes years. And our technology, exponential technology improvements, better technology helps make better technology. Our powerful computers help us make more powerful devices and mm-hmm. components. So as that keeps changing, it's a very dynamic environment. We don't have time to hang on to these old standards, really, because the world and materials and technology is changing so fast and improving so fast that to change a standard is very difficult. Look at the 810 or the IEEE Wi-Fi standard, 802.11. It's gone from
Now it's at N, I think.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and even the standard is adopted before it actually becomes an official standard. A lot of manufacturers start putting in the circuitry and getting ready for it because they know the standard will take 2 years to officially be approved.
So I guess what we're saying is that the standards do play an important role.
Yes, absolutely.
But it has to have a direct value. So if everybody plays by the standard, our Wi-Fi works down at the coffee shop.
Exactly.
Right.
And our USB plugs into every USB port that is in existence.
Right. Whereas if we have an environmental standard and we evaluate our product to meet those standards, there's no connection that everybody's playing by those rules. Consumers like us, well, I should say you in particular, leaving your phone in the car.
Yeah.
Operate outside of those limits. So in some cases, there's an inherent advantage that our designs meet a standard. But in environmental standards, I don't think that connection is there. I think it's we've outlined a number of different reasons why there's a disconnect in the strict adherence to, say, a Wi-Fi standard when you're designing a product, as opposed to a strict adherence to an environmental set of testing standards.
Yes.
It's the environmental side is dictated by the customer, and the Wi-Fi connectivity stuff is dictated by the design. So I think that's just one, and we talked about a handful of other ones, but the basic idea, and I think you agree with me, Kirk, is that environmental standards have a role, but they're not terribly useful.
No, they may be Fred, you may have said it. It's a good starting point, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. And get you some ideas about what stresses you're going to expect to encounter. But you, especially with consumer portable devices, you as a consumer know that you're, you know, living in a hot environment or whatever. And again, it's like reading the manual.
Yeah.
It's
an admission of defeat.
Right, right. Who cares whether it's 0 to 35? I only care that it works. And if it doesn't work, I'm taking it back. And if it's 100 13 Fahrenheit or, you know, outside, and this phone doesn't work. It's
not the product for me. Yeah, it's not the product. But that applies more than just consumer portable. That applies with any product, is that the environment where the person wants to use it is something we spend a lot of time in the design process trying to imagine or hallucinate or measure or understand. And it's a starting point with the standard. And then after that, you really got to get to know your customer and where they are going to use the product. So we'll wrap it up there and just say, if nothing else, if you're in a reliability engineering position and you've got a laundry list of different stresses that you need to, the gauntlet you need to run your product through, it's a way for us to get an understanding of what stresses are important for our products. And Kirk and I have certainly talked about in previous episodes of ways of going about doing that, and HALT testing. HALT is a great way to look for where the weaknesses in your design or process are.
Right.
But the basic idea of picking up a standard and it says your product shall work for 100 hours at 85 degrees C and 85 RH, and then it's oof, magically good, is just folly. And hopefully you can see why we were so strong believers in that the standards are just a starting point. What's important is that you design a product that meets or exceeds your customers' expectations, which includes where they use it.
So build it as good as you can with the materials and what standard materials and manufacturing processes are capable of, and that's my orientation, and cost. And that's about all you can do, because still products are going to be put into conditions that exceed any reasonable stress, and the customer or the consumer would certainly not blame the manufacturer for not having that capability. But as we've talked about, that capability, the strength of products and the robustness of products has been increasing and will continue to increase as materials and process improvements and change are made to the manufacturing and design. So it's a moving target.
Oh, definitely. Well, it keeps us employed, if nothing else. So thanks a lot, Kirk. We'll have to share a cup of coffee again in the near future.
All right. Look forward to it.
All right. Take care. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.